This is Imperfectly Honest. I'm Elizabeth, and after about four decades, I'm shifting from the person I always thought I should be to the person I really want to be, in part because I've learned to be honest, both with myself and just about everybody I encounter. It's not always perfect. Sometimes it's a rocky road, but I'm learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might learn something too.
Hello, all, and welcome back to Imperfectly Honest. Today, Elizabeth and her friend Heather Graham are talking about caretaking. Caretaking is a role so many of us step into at different points in our lives, often without much preparation and almost always with more complexity than we expect. This topic came about because over the last few months, Elizabeth was in the position of being a caretaker for a close friend recovering from multiple surgeries. And while this wasn't her first time caring for someone, it stirred up a lot of those familiar questions about boundaries, responsibility, love, resentment, guilt, and what it actually means to take care of others without abandoning yourself in the process. And Elizabeth's friend Heather has spent many years caring for loved ones through serious health challenges. So the pair were able to speak really candidly about what caretaking looks like, the imperfect honesty it requires, the boundaries we struggle to set, the moments we get wrong, and truly the wisdom that only comes from living it. So if you're currently caring for someone, have done so in the past, or suspect that someday you may find yourself in that role, then this episode is for you. As Elizabeth and Heather remind us, it's not about doing it perfectly. It's about learning how to stay honest for the person you're taking care of and for yourself. So without further ado, on to the episode.
Hey, y'all. We are going to talk about caretaking today. I have had this experience over the last 12 weeks or so that I have been caretaking for a friend who has had multiple minor surgeries, and I volunteered to be his caretaker. And I've been a caretaker in a few different capacities throughout my life, but it got me thinking about all of the imperfectly honest conversations that sometimes need to happen when you are a caretaker or being taken care of. I invited my friend Heather Graham, who has done a fair amount of caretaking in her lifetime, to join me for this conversation today. Heather, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me, and I think it's a really important conversation.
So, Heather, can you tell me a little bit about the kinds of caretaking that you've done in your lifetime?
Well, you know, I've helped take care of my parents in the very latter stages of their lives, although I certainly had a lot of help in those circumstances. But I have a close family member who probably for the past 15 years has had countless rounds of very serious health issues. And so I've, in those instances, been the person who recognized that there was a very serious problem, managed getting the immediate care, worked with the medical team on making sure I understood what the family member needed, and then making sure that he had what he needed to recover at our house. And in that regard, I certainly had to think about his needs, my needs, our kids' needs. How do I manage it all? You know, how do I keep, you know, how do I maintain doing my job? How do I keep my head above water? How do I keep my mental health? Because in some instances, these issues went on for some time. So it's really, and I guess for purposes of anybody listening, fortunately, he's in good shape now. But I do think, especially as we get older, you know, we have friends and family members who need care. And sometimes it's intense care and sometimes it's less intense, but we all want to support those close to us. And it's a really important role and we need to do it as best as possible.
We do. And we need to take care of ourselves as well.
Totally.
I have gotten better at taking care of myself. I was not sure whether I wanted to sign up for being a caretaker for with this most recent experience, because I have had the experience in which I've been a caretaker for my mom and then for my ex-husband in times when I was struggling with my own health. And that didn't go so hot. I really set myself back because I didn't set enough boundaries. Have you had any experiences in which you gave too much of yourself?
I mean, certainly when you're caretaking, you're not doing whatever it is you might otherwise be doing. But the most recent experience was one in which I had a sister-in-law help, and it was the best thing in the world because we tag-teamed. We tag-teamed, you know, round the clock, and it enabled me to work out. It enabled her to do the sorts of things she likes to do. And I don't know how we would have done it otherwise, but I would say, not only have I recognized that I've needed help, but I've been so fortunate to be able to find it. And I think that that's been really, 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 really important to me and my ability to do what I know needs to be done for the family member or friend.
I have never taken care of somebody who is chronically or terminally ill, which I do think is a level above and beyond the kind of caretaking that I've done. My caretaking has mostly been around short-term illnesses and then multiple orthopedic related surgeries. My mom, unfortunately, is knock-kneed, and that caused a lot of problems for her. And so she's had several surgeries on one leg, including two knee replacements, something called an osteotomy, which is a terrible surgery. And then right as she was healing from one of those, she fell and broke her hip. And I helped through those unfortunate events. And then most recently, my friend has had a shoulder surgery, an elbow surgery, and then a deviated septum repaired. And the main reason why I thought that it might be good to talk through this topic on this podcast is that for me, I've found that having conversations around setting boundaries and the kind of help that you're willing to give, and then also the kind of help that the person is willing to accept, that takes some imperfect honesty. And just to give one example for myself, one of my missteps is that I was unwilling previously to say, I can't do it all. And one of the things that I did better was actually hire some help so that I could have a little bit of a break in the day. And that was a game changer for me, just having, 2 hours where I knew that I wouldn't be interrupted to do whatever I needed to do made a big difference. And I was so glad that I did that proactively. And it took a little bit of massaging for me to be willing to admit that I needed that help. The person that I was helping, in that case, it was my mom. My mom was very open to me getting that kind of help. But for me to admit, most of my honesty has actually been me being honest with myself, rather than asking the other person to be honest with me.
I understand that exactly. When my husband had, he had a knee replacement that turned into sepsis, and he was very, very ill. He actually was in isolation at the Mayo Clinic, at the Mayo Hospital in Arizona. He was so sick. Because he also had what's called a C. difficile infection. I was the only one allowed in isolation. And you know, I visited him, you know, multiple times or as many times as I could during the day. And then there was a long rehab at the house when he was finally able to be released. And it was hard for me to say, I need to work out. It felt so selfish. Like, you're in this situation. I need to go work out, right? I mean, two different worlds. But fortunately, this was the example in which I had a sister-in-law who said, Heather, I know you need the help. I have the time. I'm retired. I'm coming down. I'm coming to visit you and I'm going to help you. And that was a gift. And she was right. And so I had somebody sort of look me in the eye when it was difficult for me to acknowledge all of this. And the sister-in-law said, look, I can see the problem in front of you and I'm going to help, which was so nice. So I wasn't in a position where I had to reach out to somebody, which would have been almost impossible. It's so hard to ask somebody. How did you manage that?
You know, I kind of just broke. The time that I did it before, I was working through some health issues myself and I set myself back and it took me several weeks to recover. And so then the next time I realized that I couldn't do that again. And I don't know, this is kind of a theme overall in my life that I have to learn to admit when I need help, and I need to be willing to disappoint others in the name of protecting myself.
But do you really feel you disappointed others when you said, I need this for myself? Don't you think that a person who is being helped wants you to do what you need to do? I'm just questioning that because I'm like you. It's very difficult to ask. It's very difficult to basically set those boundaries. But at the same time, I suspect if you were the person who needed the help, you'd only be too happy for that person to set the boundary.
Absolutely. However, I have had the experience. It was not my mother and it was not my friend who I've helped most recently, but someone else that I had taken care of in the past. I've had the experience where I set a boundary. It was really hard for me to admit that I needed help and that I couldn't do it all. And they were angry and disappointed and felt like I wasn't doing enough.
When you think about that experience now, how do you look at it? How do you evaluate it?
Oh man, I'd get a terrible pit in my stomach when I think about it, now that you asked me that. Okay. No, that's a good process, because that typically means that there's something to work through. You know, I think that is an indication that I was not meant to be in a relationship with that person. And that was because I am my own worst critic, and I push myself further than I should. And when I'm partnered with somebody who doesn't realize that, even though I'm now pretty vocal about it, or doesn't believe that, I should say, that is destructive. It's not helpful for me to be with somebody who says, you're not giving enough. It's helpful for me to be with somebody who says, hey, have you checked in on your own needs lately? And that's not true of every personality, but for me, that is true. And I needed to learn that.
Well, all I can say is I'm glad you've learned it, Elizabeth, because I think your takeaways are exactly right. You know, if that's the circumstance, then you're not supposed to be with that person. I agree with you. But having said that, you know, taking care of someone and creating the space that you need is always a dicey, or can be a very difficult line to draw and a difficult thing to get in place that works for both people. So what can you tell us a little bit about the 12 weeks you've been a caretaker most recently and how you've navigated that given what you knew at the start of it?
Yeah, I would say that I've done a much better job this round for a couple reasons. I knew that I needed to take care of myself and be prepared. So I hired some help to have some backup. And I wasn't sure when I was going to need that help or what they were going to do. I just had an inkling that I was going to need it. And so I found someone who was willing to just sort of be flexible and to give me a certain number of hours each day. And I'm so glad that I did that because I didn't need that person for all those hours, but we did need them for a lot of them. And just knowing that I had that flexibility was really freeing for me. I felt like I wasted some money because we didn't use every hour that we paid for, but the benefit of knowing that someone would be there if I needed it was worth a lot to me.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
How did you go about hiring somebody? Who did you reach out to? What was your process for finding somebody? Because somebody listening to this podcast maybe saying, okay, I need to do that. You've convinced me. Now what do I do?
Yeah, I've gone a couple different routes. So my mom was recovering and we couldn't find anybody to help her. So I actually got creative and called a babysitting service and ended up getting this guy who was like 20 years old and was used to babysitting six-year-olds. And I convinced this agency to allow him to quote unquote babysit my mom. And it was hilarious. He took her on all these outings and drove her to physical therapy and stuff. And so that was one creative idea. Most recently, I reached out to some seasonal workers who happened to be in their off season. And that's how I found somebody. I ended up finding somebody who runs a transportation business in Big Sky, and it was the fall during his off season. So he had some extra time. But I think just getting creative about somebody who might have some extra time or somebody who might just have a job that's similar to caretaking. And then there are services, they're expensive, but there are services like at-home health services. Sometimes you can find people through those avenues. And then there's also some concierge services that will have some extra hours as well. And sometimes even just neighborhood high school kids. You know, it's for me, I didn't need anybody to do anything high level. I just sort of needed somebody to be there to be able to call 911 or to, you know, drive my mom to physical therapy.
Right. So I think in terms of your mom, we understand that. In terms of taking care of your friend the last 12 weeks or so, was the help that was provided simply having somebody there in case somebody went wrong or in case something went wrong or what? Can you describe, in other words, what kind of help did that person provide?
Well, this person did all sorts of random stuff, ran to the grocery store for me, went to the pharmacy, helped me fix a shower. shoveled some snow, just really random stuff. And I set those expectations ahead of time that I'm not sure what help that I'll need, but I'm probably going to need some extra hours in the day. So I'd like to just have somebody on hold for that.
So that sounds like a great way of going about it, because you didn't know. How did your friend feel about having somebody come in to the house that he didn't know and performing those kinds of services?
Well, he was a little bit hesitant because he felt like I was already giving enough help and that he would be okay by himself. And I said, that's great. If you are fine, that's fine. But I'd like to have somebody on in the wings just in case we need them. And he agreed to that. And after about 3 days, he was grateful that we had that person because we did need help. And the other thing too, that I didn't fully realize until this experience over the last 12 weeks, caretaking is very isolating. You know, when you're living with someone who doesn't feel up to having company, and you don't feel like you want to be out of the house much, it's really isolating. And it can be hard for both parties because the person who's recovering is kind of sick of talking to their caretaker. We spent a lot of time together. And the person who has more energy is feeling like they want to get out of the house and be social. You know, I shouldn't say everyone feels this way, but speaking for myself, that's how I was feeling. And the person I was taking care of just wasn't up for that. So I was really grateful just to have another person to come in just to shake things up a little bit from a conversation standpoint.
Well, you know, that's true. But so in terms of caretaking, the person who needs to be taken care of probably isn't feeling very good and is probably right. Very frustrated and could be in a lot of pain. So that one-on-one intensity and the isolation that comes from that can become even more challenging when, understandably, the person who is being taken care of feels like hell. And maybe they're worried about whether they're ever going to recover. How did you and your friend manage that issue?
He's a good patient. That really helps. I think you see people's true colors in these situations. And I've kind of figured out that I only want to take care of good patients, people who are grateful for help and who have a desire to try to help themselves, but don't have too much of an ego to refuse help from others. And I have spent enough time with this person to know that they were like that. So that made life much easier. But this is a little bit of a different topic, but I don't want to miss it. So I actually think that one of the good things about caretaking is you figure out your capacity to give and to love. And one of the good things that's come out of my experience of giving too much is that I figured out that I'm able to transcend my normal parameters in the name of caring for someone. And
I'm going to interrupt you there. What do you mean by that?
You know, one example is I'm a pretty routine person. I get up, I have breakfast and ease into the day, get my workout in, feel like I quote unquote need to do those things to be productive and healthy through the day. And when you're caretaking, you don't always get to do that. And on this one particular day, the friend that I was taking care of had a minor complication from the surgery, and we actually had to go to the ER. And we spent 5 hours in the ER, totally unplanned. I hadn't had breakfast. I hadn't showered. I didn't have enough sleep from the night prior. And there was no place I would rather be. It was like I had this ability to ignore all of those needs for a day because I wanted to be there. And that desire to be there for that person helped me overcome all the inconveniences and lack of self-care that I did for a day. Now, if I did that for 100 days, I don't think that my body would do very well with that. Probably not even 5 days. But knowing that our animal instinct will kick in those moments is actually really comforting for me.
That's a really good point. So one of the takeaways is your ability to not care about the things that you really like about your day-to-day life. Those things are less important than the moment and helping the person that you're with get through the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So going back to the last 12 weeks, what are the sorts of things you have been doing in terms of caretaking?
Preparing meals, cleaning, just kind of being there when I'm needed, waking up in the middle of the night to give pain medication. You know, that's one of the things that I find to be disruptive, but also interesting as to how my body reacts to that. So I don't have children, and actually I'd be curious to hear your perspective on this, but I have heard that mothers almost become superhuman because it's like their innate ability to care kicks in. And so when they do things like get up in the middle of the night to help a sick child, it doesn't completely throw them off like it would on a normal day if something else woke them up in the middle of the night. And I definitely had that experience, you know, for I've probably had 3 weeks of this 12 weeks where I was waking up every 4 hours to help with pain medication. And if I was waking up every 4 hours in my normal life, I would really feel groggy through the day and feel like I was just not doing well from a health standpoint. And it didn't bother me at all. It was almost superhuman. I'm curious if you've had that experience as a mother.
Well, I think so, but I don't think it's necessarily because I am a mother, you know, had raised two little kids. I think it's perhaps a question of expectations because in my case, my husband shared the responsibilities. And so I don't think it's a biological function necessarily. I think it's perhaps expectations. And you probably went into this knowing that this was going to be required and you willingly took it on. And so the disruption caused by getting up every couple of hours in the middle of the night wasn't what it might have been had it been unexpected. So hard to say, and I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, analyses of this, but my thought would be it's a question of expectations.
Well, and you have a good catch there because I said mother because I'm a woman and I was thinking of myself being a mother, but I appreciate that sometimes in conversations we talk about women being the caretakers and it doesn't necessarily need to be the case. So I appreciate you bringing to light the male role in all of this.
Yeah, and actually my most recent experience along those lines is with a family member who just a few months ago had a baby. And okay, it was one of my daughters, and she and her husband, and they already had a 2-year-old. So they divided the night, and one would sleep from one time to the next, wake the other one up. And so they created a schedule to meet the newborn's needs. And I mean, they knew what the schedule was, and I'm sure each would have liked to have had more sleep than they got, but they were young parents. This was the deal, and they took it on happily. So I think I wouldn't cut yourself short, Elizabeth, in any way. I think it's a question of expectations.
I like that thought.
So yeah, I give you a gold star. Are there any other ways in which you've helped yourself while helping others? I mean, you've talked about hiring help. You've talked about getting help when you've realized you needed it. But are there other ways in which you've helped yourself in the role of a caretaker?
You know, realizing my strengths and accepting my weaknesses has been really important. So one thing that I learned this time is that I shouldn't expect that daily routines are going to be the same. And it's good to have some conversations up front about that. So it's just one example. My friend who I've been taking care of also happens to be my roommate with this project that I've been working on. And he has the same thing for breakfast every morning, which does not require cooking. And I do not cook. I have just resigned to the fact that I hate cooking. I don't even know how to do simple things like make eggs. I can barely make a piece of toast, but I'm excellent at outsourcing cooking and making sure that there are healthy meals in the refrigerator at all times. And he knows that about me and really appreciates that. And I kind of assumed that he was going to wake up and have the same breakfast that he normally did. Well, when he woke up and felt terrible, he didn't want that. And he asked me if I could make him some eggs, and it was a train wreck. And I felt badly about that because I feel like I should be able to at least make some eggs. I looked on YouTube as to how to make them ahead of time and still messed them up. And was trying to figure out what to do about that. And I thought, well, okay, I'll just watch YouTube a couple times, and then the next morning I'll do it. And I did that. And I tried that 3 days in a row, and they were terrible. And he was a good sport about it. He said, I can tell that these were made with love and they are terrible.
Well, good for him. That was a nice way of, really nice way of handling it.
Yeah. So, you know, if I do this again, I am going to have a pre-made egg casserole that I can heat up in the morning instead of making it a disaster. Because the other thing is, part of why I didn't do a very good job is because I was multitasking and trying to, you know, get out of the house for his appointment and all those things. And just accepting that there's not a lot of time in the morning when you're taking care of somebody and they need to get out for a PT appointment or something. It takes longer when they are unable to take care of themselves.
So would a takeaway be, in advance of being a caretaker, talking to the person who needs the assistance about food and figuring out if there's any disconnect between their needs and your abilities? And I don't mean you personally, I mean anybody.
Yeah, and I think just having a conversation ahead of time about daily activities, going through kind of a checklist of, okay, normally when you wake up in the morning, what do you do before you leave the house? Okay, what are those things are you going to be unable to do? So for instance, in this last thing, he wasn't able to use his arm for 2 days because he had this nerve block and it was just dead. So, you know, he couldn't button his shirt. So we needed to make sure that he had a shirt that he didn't have to button. Just kind of going through the basic things. And especially with people who are used to being fiercely independent and very high performing people, getting them to be honest about what they are not going to be able to do. Also trusting your gut. I've had this experience before where, you know, the person I was taking care of said, oh, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be able to do these things. And I knew in my head, no, that's not how it's going to go down. And I was right. And I planned ahead. And sometimes you just, it's not worth arguing in the moment. And sometimes it actually scares the person to know ahead of time that they're not going to be able to do simple things. And so trusting your gut and thinking through the things that they normally do and how those things might go wrong is helpful.
You know, Elizabeth, what you just described, I think is really, really important. I mean, and it's a combination of, you know, going through the basic things prior to the care experience and finding out what the normal routines are, what's important to the person who's about to require the care, plus the caregiver trusting your gut, plus, and this might be the most important thing you said to me, don't argue about it in the moment. That is really wise, because I have taken care of people who are what you described. They say, I don't need the help. I know I can do it. Don't worry about it. Thank you for volunteering. It's going to be fine. You know, it's not going to be, you know, they need care. They don't want to admit that they're going to need care, or maybe they're scared, who knows, but their position is they're not going to need what you think they need. Don't argue about it. Just go with your gut.
Exactly.
I think that's a really, really good point. So I do have a question for you. Have you ever required a caretaker? And if so, do you have any takeaways that have helped you when you've been a caretaker?
You know, it's funny you say that, because not really. I've had a lot of health issues and I've had some surgeries and things, but I've actually never been in a situation where I really couldn't take care of myself as an adult. I had, you know, experiences of being sick as a child and things like that. But some of the things that I've learned just from the minor things that I've had is that sometimes people will offer to help, and they really want to help. And I've had the experience where they've wanted to help and I didn't want their help for a logical, well thought out reason, but I was afraid to hurt their feelings by refusing their help. And that was a mistake. I've learned to trust my gut on that. When you feel like someone's going to be less rather than more help, listen to that intuition and have an imperfectly honest conversation. And the other thing too is when you feel like someone's not going to be able to help you at your standards, I have some judgments about the way that I said that, sounding like a control freak, but I do have certain standards, and I've learned to relax those standards in times when I need help. And when you aren't feeling well and you have an intuition that somebody is going to deliver a subpar product with their caretaking, listen to that intuition, because you are not going to be your best self when you need a caretaker. And so you need to just take care of yourself first.
So I don't know if you're going to be able to give an example of what you're talking about, but if you can, it would be helpful.
Yeah. I had somebody who really wanted to pick me up from my surgery, and they made a big deal about how they wanted to be that person. And it was a big time commitment, and it really didn't require a high level person to do that. They were, I just needed somebody to drive me home, and they were going to need to wait like 4 hours because I was having surgery quite a ways away from my house. And so this person really wanted to do it. And I knew that this person was a very, very busy person who often said yes to things, took on things that they really didn't have room to do. And they tried to book all these conference calls while they were waiting for me. And then I got out of surgery a little bit earlier than expected. And so then I ended up having to wait for them to pick me up. It just, I knew in my heart that it was going to go down like that. And they were just so insistent that they wanted to be that person and that they had the time to do it. And I should have listened to my intuition.
So this wasn't a question of them not, you know, meeting your standards or something like that. I think what you meant was you knew that there wasn't a good match between what you knew you were going to need and what they thought they could provide. And you yielded to this person because they offered to help and for whatever, you know, personal relationship you had with them, while at the same time, your gut was telling you this is a bad idea. And so it wasn't a question of standards. It was a question of meeting the needs at the time, that of your needs at the time, against what you knew they had available or not available.
But I did have standards, though. So my standard was that I wanted somebody to just be there and available with no other distractions. So as soon as I was ready to go home, they could take me. I didn't want to wait in discomfort in a hospital bed for longer than I needed to.
Okay. And, fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And they, it's not that they were, you know, that they neglected me to the point where they put my health at risk or anything like that. I was just fine waiting there, but I was much more uncomfortable waiting in the hospital than I was laying in my own bed at home. So absolutely, that was my standard.
Yes, I see what you're saying. And I think that goes to some of your earlier points, one of which was trust your instincts. Another one is clear expectations, although the, you know, the context at this point of our discussion is a little bit different. The clear expectation is I need to go as soon as I can leave the hospital. I need to go. I think anybody understands that.
Right.
Nobody wants to wait. And when you're coming out of surgery or you're getting out of a hospital, you don't feel good and you want to be in your own bed if possible.
Right.
Wow. Huh. Well, I can weigh in on one point. When I had my knee replaced, my husband was my caregiver, and it turns out I was allergic to opioids. So the only medication I had available post-surgery was Tylenol. And for anybody who's had a knee replacement, they know that doesn't do it, at least for the first 5 or 6 days. So
gosh,
I was in a lot of pain. And the only relief came from ice. And I can't tell you how many times I asked my husband to, I mean, we agreed he should sleep in another bed because he'd never get any sleep with me trying to find a comfortable spot. But I would text him, or I don't remember if we had walkie talkies. We had some way of communicating. So many times in the middle of the night, I would buzz him and just ask for ice. And this is a takeaway for me when I'm a caregiver in the future. He never complained once. He always did it in good spirits. He always did it lovingly. And that was so essential. And so a takeaway for me the next time a caregiver is, remember that attitude, because it's so helpful to the person who's lying there in bed in pain. So
yeah, that's great advice.
Well,
that's great advice.
It's self-advice, if nothing else. So what is the most positive shift you think you've made in your role as a caregiver from years ago with perhaps your mom or others to your most recent experience in the last 12 weeks?
You know, actually, I think the most positive shift that I've made is accepting that I'm gonna mess up. I have tried to engineer things so that I don't give too much of myself and that I don't overstep my boundaries with the person that I'm taking care of, and that I try to do everything by the book and have things planned out. And it just doesn't work that smoothly. And so this time I just gave myself permission that I was probably going to give too much of myself, that I was probably going to sleep less than I should, that I probably was going to annoy the person that I was taking care of, or, you know, make terrible eggs 3 days in a row. And because I knew that I was doing it with love and that I had good intentions and that I was doing my best, I could trust that that would be enough, even though I would mess up. And I could also trust that even if I gave too much of myself and did some things that maybe weren't the healthiest for my body, that I would recover. And those things have all turned out to be true. And I learned more from my mistakes than I did from the things that I did well.
Well, I think that's fantastic, Elizabeth. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because it's sure making me think a lot harder about how I'm going to be a better caretaker in the future. Are there any issues surrounding your caretaking experience and takeaways that you want to make sure we address?
You know, I think I've covered everything I wanted to cover today. We've covered a lot, but Heather, I'd actually love to hear your answer to the question that you just asked me about the most positive shift that you've made as a caretaker.
I think recognizing from the start that I might need help is perhaps one of the most important shifts. And especially as we get older, perhaps the health issues become more complicated. And so recognizing that help is required, even maybe required, and setting that up in advance, I think it is really, really important. And then secondly, I think I just have a lot more compassion, especially since, you know, I've been through a knee replacement. Pain is something. And for the person who needs the care, they're emotional state and their capacity could well be very different from what they normally have. And so I think for the caretaker, the caretaker needs to keep that in mind. And then finally, I think the caretaker, and this was your first point, really needs to take care of him or herself. And I've been fortunate that I've been able to call on that help. You know, and again, it's on one hand, it feels very selfish to say, I need 2 hours to go work out. On the other hand, if that's what enables you to be positive, to get up in the middle of the night, to keep track of the pain meds, and to make eggs if you can, I think that that's really important. So all of the, but I think the main takeaway I have from this conversation, Elizabeth, is talking about expectations in advance. Sometimes the caretaking comes about in an emergency context and you don't have the opportunity to do that. But I really like your point about finding out day-to-day schedule, what's important to you, what are things that you do that maybe I can't do. Those are great conversations to have. And I don't hear anybody talking about that. And I think that's a great point.
Well, Heather, you had some great thoughts today, and I so appreciate all the love and care you've given as a caretaker. And thank you for being here today.
Well, I think I got out of this conversation a lot, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have it with you.
I appreciate that too. Thank you. All right, listeners, until next time. Bye.